The Michigan State University Opera Theater is presenting Mozart's The Magic Flute starting tonight in the newly renovated Fairchild Theater. The vocalists are directed by MSU Professor of Voice Melanie Helton, and MSU Director of Orchestras Kevin Noe leads the orchestra. Current State's Melissa Benmark talked with Noe about his first time leading The Magic Flute.
There are some conducting challenges. Physically, it's just the hardest thing we ever do. I mean, a Mahler symphony is much more straightforward in many ways than conducting an opera. But I think the real challenge is marrying theater and music. That's the challenge. How do you get the intention of the words to be impeccably clear, not just from a diction standpoint, which is difficult always, but from an intention standpoint? How do you get the words driving things? How do you get the musicians in the pit hanging on those words and then shaping things by intention, by narrative, rather than simply shaping musically? You know what I mean? I think that's what's really hard. That's the challenge. That's where I spend most of my time. That's where the great joys of opera conducting come, and that's where the great heartaches come, when you can't seem to blend those two.
Did the instrumentalists have to keep kind of an eye on stage as well as on you?
Well, in order to stay together, they don't necessarily have to keep an eye on stage, but they have to keep a profound sense of awareness of what's going on stage. Now, I hate to say this, but in many systems of putting together a pit orchestra plus the cast on the stage, there's so little emphasis placed on the people in the pit knowing what's going on, it puts them in a very kind of disabled position to connect with the people on stage. But we spend a lot of time, I mean, everybody in the orchestra knows the story, they know what every aria is about, so they know what we're trying to accomplish. And in many cases, I've had them write in words underneath what they're playing so that they know not only what the intention is, but the length. You know, if somebody says, "I love you," and you see three quarter notes, then you can play bum, bum, bum. You know, you have that sort of "I love you" tension and release that is such the foundation of Western music and Mozart in particular. So I think that stuff is essential, and that's the good stuff. But again, it's an enormous task because you've got, you know, my score is 400 pages. So you've got, it's just a lot to ask, you know. The musicians in the orchestra, the violin section, the poor violin section has, I would love to count the number of notes in Magic Flute. I shudder to even imagine 20,000 or more, probably. I wouldn't doubt it, you know. And each one of them is part of some connected thing, something with intention, you know. You try coming up with 20,000 perfectly in tune and together intentions that are shaped by a narrative. You know, it's tough stuff.
What is it about this opera that makes people say, okay, if you've never seen an opera before, you want to start out, see The Magic Flute? Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. You know, this is my first time with flute, so maybe it is because it is so, I don't know if malleable is the right word, but it's such a universal subject, and it can be seen in so many different ways. It is the type of opera that, depending on the way the director chooses to emphasize certain themes or other themes, it can take a new shape each time. And those themes, that plethora of themes is so universal that, again, depending on how that's handled, you may find certain aspects of it really apply to you easily. You know, David Mamet, the great playwright and director, he's saying, you know, great writing is not telling you exactly every little specific thing that is happening. Great writing is hooking you into believing that you are, in fact, the protagonist, you know. So if you say, for example, a man went into the forest in search of a girl, and it's a man hearing this story, he immediately thinks he is heading into the forest in search of this girl. But if you say, a man in his early 20s with a twinkle in his eye and wonderful blonde locks of hair went off in search of a dark maiden, but all of a sudden you think, well, that's some other guy, and that couldn't possibly have anything to do with me. And the art is dancing that line of where it's descriptive enough that it's plausible, but it still makes you believe that you are, in fact, participating, you know? And I think Magic Flute has that framework to it. It's general enough that you can cast yourself into it, you know, and it's specific enough to keep you engaged and compelled, you know? I think that's probably it. And, of course, the music is not shabby. Yeah.
Do you find a particular part that to you is sort of the most charming or moving to be directing? I know it's hard to pick in something of that length, but...
You mean within the opera itself, within Magic Flute? There are an awful lot of really touching things. I mean, the Tamino and Pamina final or first kiss, I guess, the final arrival, which is their kiss, is such a nice moment when they finally come together. That's a beautiful thing. I think little subtle things in opera are the things that really interest me, one relationship of one character to the next. I think the particular way that Papageno and Tamino relate to each other, not just their own threads as they go forward. Tamino is on this great search to find his love, which is Pamina, and Papageno, in a much more roundabout and somewhat more cowardly way, is on, you know, on a search for Papageno, his love interest. They go about it in such different ways, but on the way they collide into each other in this really interesting way, and there's this sort of like a odd couple relationship between the two of them. I think that's really fascinating, you know. I think the backstory about what may have happened that drove a wedge between Zarastro and the Queen of the Night is fascinating. You know, here the whole story, all the action, all the plot is driven by this some type of feud between the two of them over whatever it is, and yet we never see the two of them on stage together. They never come together and sort of like, you know, butt heads or anything. They just obviously had something happen between the two of them, whatever it is. The queen says it's that Zarastro gave the circle of the sun and this and that and the other, but, you know, I always had this feeling that maybe she wasn't all giving the whole truth about things, you know, and that their relationship in the past may have been something more than what they're telling anybody else, you know. So, I don't know, the backstory there is quite fascinating. You know, for me, it's always about the relationship of the characters. And if you can embed the music within that in a really special kind of way, what you wind up doing in opera, and this is my favorite kind of opera, and I recognize I'm in the minority on this, is that I forget they're singing. That's when I'm really in. Of course there are singing, and if you ask me, I would say, I guess they're singing. But when I lose track of that and I'm not marveling at the vocal apparatus and the pipes and I'm following that story and I'm following the connection and it's heightened in a way that only music could ever bring that level of intensity, that's when I'm in real opera for me.
Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. For Current State, I'm Melissa Venmark.